Hello and welcome to episode 2 of The Paper Crane, a podcast from Codes in the Clouds and a Misspent Youth Productions. My name is Kieran.
And I'm Jack.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Joe. Thank you so much for your feedback from last week's episode. We had a really great time. This week's episode is with Hazel Wild from Lanterns on the Lake and Lights on Moscow. This year she was a judge on the panel for the Mercury Prize, having been nominated for last year's award. On that note, congratulations to Arlo Parks on this year's prize. I think it's a very deserved win.
Me too. I've always loved Arlo Parks.
Immediate. Do you know what's good for a podcast? In jokes.
So in jokes that no one else gets. No, but I'm getting in. What I'm doing is, before you expose this lie, this campaign you have against me, I'm getting in there early. I've always loved Arlo Parks.
Hours now.
At least half an hour. So Steve is a fan of the winners of the Mercury Prize.
And only the winners of the Mercury Prize.
A very dependent, submissive tastes.
This, just to bring listeners in case you want to chuck any abuse at Steve on social media, it started when he really got into Elbow, and that just happened it happened to be after they'd won the Mercury Prize, and since then, pretty much everyone that he likes has been accused of being in some way affiliated with, Jay-Z, he's won a Mercury.
Jay-Z's the most outrageous one of all.
No, I think Manchester United was more outrageous than that.
That's true.
Manchester United or Dartford FC.
Do you remember how devastated Steve was last year when he thought the pandemic was going to have the Mercuries called off?
I wouldn't be able to listen to
it. No new artists for 2020.
Wouldn't have heard any music. This interview wouldn't have happened. He would have written it straight off.
Actually, I've got one more outrageous than Manchester United. I can't remember specifically what it was, but it probably was paella. I got into a new...
It was definitely
a new food.
In your world, plenty of things have won the Mercury, mate. We're talking Blue Water Shopping Centre, education, the Labour Party. They've all won the Mercury.
So, it sounds like you guys had a good time on last week's episode. But once again, we find ourselves in a familiar position where the interviewers are without possibly their greatest striker, J-Madge.
I think what's good is that we introduce ourselves but only say our first name. So you saying J-Madge means absolutely nothing to the listeners.
It will, mate, in the 300th episode.
He calls himself the J-Madge. We call him the Uninvited.
This is like a horror movie.
Profoundly unwelcome.
The Unwelcome. That's my nickname.
The name of Jack's biography.
Actually, Jack, to be fair, yes, this week was just Kieran and I talking to Hazel. But next week, we're talking to Alan and Anna. Tiny cameo from Mimi of the band Low, but that was just you and I, if you remember.
It was a particularly exciting episode.
Although I've cut out everything you've said, and I've got Steve to replace the vocals because I felt bad for Steve.
I mean, I can't really talk because I'm not on this one, but we had a lot of really good feedback about the first episode, and you've got to wonder, just trends.
But anyway, I mean, I wish I knew some information.
It would be good to hear from the robot, wouldn't it?
In, like, digestible chunks.
Hazel Wild facts.
I'll never get bored of that.
Will he ever just come straight in and we won't react to that? No, I don't think I can hear it.
Because what listeners don't know is that's genuinely the most personality Kieran's voice has ever had.
Hazel Wild facts.
It's just so good.
Hazel is a member of bands Lanterns on the Lake and Lights on Moscow. Lanterns on the Lake have released 4 studio albums and 1 live album with the Royal Northern Sinfonia.
Oh, it's good though. That.
Although they did release a sneaky EP towards the end of last year.
What? Those little tykes.
Their last record, Spook the Herd, was nominated for a Mercury Award in 2020. this year, Hazel was also announced as a judge for the 2021 Mercury Awards. Mm. Hopefully, she voted for Arlo Parks. Otherwise, she is going to look stupid.
And that's from the fact man. So, it's a fact. Wow. That's canon.
Lights on Moscow released a record in 2018, but as a part one EP. However, in this episode, we hear that they are planning a part two.
It was great talking to Hazel. We are massive fans of her work, as you'll hear. We talked to her about her start in music, her Hendrix-esque medical need to be in a band, being nominated for a Mercury, as well as being on this year's panel, and the pain of band personnel changes. Enjoy the show. Yeah, how have you been? So is it been a mixture of rehearsals and parenting, I guess?
Yeah, a mixture of we started working on writing new music. Once those kind of the first lockdowns were over, we got back in a room together. So we're kind of in the flow of writing, and also we'll have a tour coming up, so we're trying to rehearse for that.
Sure.
When really all you want to do is work on new music, don't you? But things have to
be. Absolutely. So you're writing a new record, and you're about to tour your last record, which did incredibly, by the way. Belated congratulations on the Mercury nomination and everything.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, we were really pleased with how it seemed to go down. It was just a shame we couldn't tour it at the time. It's hard to tell how people are receiving the album without playing it in a room to them and kind of feeling that reaction. So it will be nice to go out and play those songs after all this time, and hopefully there'll be people that who have lived with the record for the last year or so, and who really know the songs by now and are looking forward to hearing them.
Absolutely. It was definitely one of my big lockdown 1 hour exercise a day albums.
Oh, great.
Yeah, how has lockdown been? Frustrating, or were you one of the productive people?
I definitely wasn't one of the productive people, and I did really envy other people who were saying how much they were getting done and being really proactive with their lives and on creative projects and stuff like that. For me, fortunately in some respect, but I had a baby in August 2019, so right. I think she was 6-7 months when the first lockdown started, and obviously you couldn't have anyone help with childcare, so it was just pretty full on being a new mom at that time, and unfortunately just didn't get any chance to work on any music. And I think I have spoken to some other artists as well quite recently where you felt kind of it was almost like it seemed like the rest of the world who were artists were getting loads done and writing loads of music, and you felt like you just weren't able to do that. And even those brief glimpses of free time, I felt so much overwhelming pressure to actually try and come up with some music that it was kind of stifling, really.
But it's rare that an artist would release a record in February and then suddenly start writing a new record.
Exactly.
I mean, you were ready to go on tour with it, so I mean, I wouldn't be too hard
on
yourself.
Right. we were really looking forward to that. And now we're kind of in the frame of mind of we're a bit in the zone now with working on new stuff. And so it almost feels like it's an interruption to that in a way. But I think we would like to try and put a few of the new songs in the set for this tour. And I'm sure the last thing people want to hear when they're going to see a band they've been trying to see for a while is new songs. But I'm sure they won't mind one or two. But it for us, that would just give it a bit more energy and would feel a bit more excitement going into that tour.
Are you one of those bands that that thinks that their newer stuff is better than their older stuff?
Always.
Always.
I think you've got to be.
You have to, yeah.
I feel like your best stuff is the most recent thing that you're working on. Otherwise, there's just not much point.
It's interesting you bring up parenting, actually, because we spoke to Lo. For listeners, this is out of sequence, so your episode will be coming up before the Low episode, but we spoke to them about parenting in music. Obviously, their kids are a lot older now. But so, will you be taking your kid on tour? Will you have childminders with you, or what? How is it going to work?
So, because we're quite new to it, it's been a tricky one to try and schedule and arrange. And I think we made the decision to, even though it will probably financially not be great, was to break up the tour into chunks of sort of three days at a time. And that way we can get back to see her regularly and only be away a few days at a time and then be home for, you know, 4 or 5 days or something. And luckily, we are very, very lucky that we have really supportive families, and our grandparents are really involved in our life anyway.
Amazing.
So I think just at this age that she is now, because I'm aware that did they take their kid on tour?
Yeah, they did.
It is something we've spoke about, but I think the age that she is now, it's just wouldn't really be fair to her. So maybe we'll do that further down the line when she's a little bit older and she can enjoy it more and not get really, really frustrated sitting in a van for hours a day.
No, I'm sure. But how's parenting been over lockdown?
Nowadays it's a lot easier because she sleeps a full night. Lovely. She goes and spends time with her grandparents, goes to nursery one day a week and things like that. So it's a lot more easier to manage. But yeah, during that first lockdown, looking back, I don't really know how I survived or how other people survived. I don't know how I'd survive if I was a single parent, definitely.
Sure.
It was just pretty full on, and you know, I was still trying to find my feet being a parent.
Yeah.
So trying to manage a lockdown in that was a bit tricky, to say the least.
Yeah, I bet. So what have you already started to push music on her? Are you trying to recreate your own musical childhood with her? What were the things you were listening to as a kid, and are you making your daughter listen to them?
So when I was a kid, I loved music, like absolutely, from a really, really, really young age. I think my parents have told us in the past that when I was only just learning to talk, I was singing Cyndi Lauper time after time.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I've always been really drawn to music. And that was a really big part of my childhood. I don't know if it was really forced on me. Mm. And one of the things I really don't want to do with my daughter is force her into things that I like. But she does seem to have got the music bug.
Great.
And I don't know if that's a good thing, because you guys probably are aware that getting into music can just lead to a lifetime of heartache. Yes. So, I don't know if it's a good thing, but I'm not going to try and force anything on it to her, or try and, you know, force her not to be into music. But she does absolutely love music, and she even likes Bob Dylan, which is great. It's good for me.
Wow, lovely.
Yeah. But I mean, the main song for her at the minute is Old MacDonald.
It's a classic.
Yeah, staple.
An absolute banger, yeah. So she's really into that one and sings it multiple times a day.
Lovely. What were the first albums, apart from Cyndi Lauper, obviously, that you remember loving as a child?
So I loved the Beatles as a kid. What else did I love? My mum liked Motown music, so I would listen to a lot of that. What else? I just used to really like any pop music that was happening at the time as well.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure from about the age of 4, I was just, that was like my main obsession was music.
Yeah. So same for me, my awakening was the Beatles when I was like 4 or 5 or whatever. What were the first Beatles songs you remember loving?
So one of the first pieces of music that I owned, not quite the Beatles, but related, was Paul McCartney's The Frog Chorus.
Yes, please.
So that one. But also we used to love going on, whenever we were in our dad's car, we used to love them playing, we called it the aeroplane song, but it was back in the USSR.
Yeah, oh, because it starts with the, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember sort of like headbanging to that quite a lot. And then we also, when I say we, I'm talking about me and my little brother, we also used to watch Magical Mystery Tour like a lot.
Was that your favorite Beatles movie?
I mean it's weird and kind of twisted and
massively.
Yeah, so it's not really a very child-friendly film, I don't think, but for whatever reason we were really into that.
I don't remember that film well at all, but I watched it when I was really ill as a kid.
And then
I threw up, and that's what I remember of. I'm much happier. I prefer the safer world of Help, where Ringo gets paint chucked on him. That's where I'm. That's my safe space for Beatles movies.
That's not kid friendly. I'm surprised you went sick at the scene. Is there not a scene where someone's eaten an enormous amount of spaghetti?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. I mean, that's enough to me.
Absolutely. So what about when you first joined a band?
So I was like desperate to join a band when I was a teenager, and I was always trying to cajole friends into forming bands with us. And it was, I could never get anything off the ground, you know. I'd be like, guys, I've written a song. But I don't think, I think when you're a teenager, lots of people like the idea of being in a band, but not the actual reality of getting in a room and trying to figure out how to play together. So, it was like, it was well after I left school that I joined my first band, which was actually with Paul and Paul, who I'm in Lanterns with now.
Wow.
And it was a case of, I think I met the bass player at the time in a pub, and he was talking about a band. And yeah, I was just like, it's hard to describe how desperate I was to join a band.
Like meeting a bass player in a pub.
Yeah. it was like this all-consuming thing with me. And I think I remember watching a documentary about Jimi Hendrix, and there was a bit in it where somebody said, as a kid, I think like a social worker or a teacher or someone had written a report about him, and it said, and it was before he'd touched the guitar, but it said, this child needs a guitar so much it's damaging him mentally. And that's how I felt about needing to join a band. And I couldn't really, and I still can't, I'm not a great musician, but I can get by. I'm not a great singer, but I can get by. And same with songs, but I just felt like if I was in a band, I would feel complete. So I joined this band with those guys, and we didn't play covers or anything like that. We got straight into, I think the first day I played with them, we wrote a song.
Wow.
And then it just went from there.
Interesting. So were you not a very confident singer then?
No, in fact, when I joined them, so when I met the bass player, he was called Ed, and what he said was he was in a band and they were looking for a singer. So I offered to do a bit of singing until they found a singer.
Right.
And I really liked writing songs. So what I thought was I could kind of get in that way. I'd get into the band, write the songs, sing for a bit until we found a singer, and I'd play a bit of rhythm guitar or something like that.
Right.
But all these years later, I'm still singing.
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, I remember first hearing your voice, because I love your voice, by the way.
Thank you.
But the first, it wasn't Lanterns, because we recorded our first record in 2008 with our mutual friend Justin Lockie.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I believe you'd already started doing Lights on Moscow at that time, and he sent us the demos.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 10 years later, that album eventually came out. But so yeah, at what point did you meet Justin and start working together?
I think that we met when I was in that early band. I'll just tell you the name. We were called Green Space. I know it's a really shit name.
Green Space. Okay.
Pretty bad name.
That's nice.
So I met him when I was in that band. He can remember meeting me in a pub in Newcastle and is having a conversation. I couldn't really remember that very well. But,
so is that what people do up north? They just meet band members.
You talk to strangers up there.
what we do, just walk into pubs and seek out other musicians.
Because obviously, he'd been in Milo for a while by this point.
I think he must have been in Milo at that time. And then a few years later, he sent me an email through, I think he got my contact details through a mutual friend and said he had a band called, it was the British Expeditionary Force, actually.
Yeah.
So he asked if I could come and do some backing vocals with them and play a bit of guitar, I think it was. So I went along to meet him and talk about that. And when I was there, I took the music away. And he said, we were in his little studio that he had at the time, which was in the back of like a rehearsal studio in Newcastle.
Right.
And he said, I'll just play you this. It's just some rough ideas I've got for a project. I don't really know what I'm doing with it. And I absolutely loved it. And that was a lot of that made up the music that became Lights on Moscow. I took that away and like wrote loads of lyrics and vocals to go with that stuff. And then we sort of just exchanging in a lot of ideas, and then I never even got round to doing anything with British Expeditionary Force. But
sure.
So were you supposed to? So you were supposed to do stuff with the British Expeditionary Force?
Yeah, I think that was the original idea, and probably still is the idea. But I just
I'd love to hear a third record from those guys. They were one of our favourite bands when they released.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but between us and your listeners, I think there is some work in the pipeline that I have heard.
God, he's so sneaky. Justin is so sneaky.
Sneaky boy.
He does all this stuff in the background. He's supposed to be in editors. How does he have time? How does he have time to do everything?
I know, and runs his own label and everything as well.
To put into context from when I first heard, so how long it takes for Justin to do work, I first heard Lights on Moscow when Justin sent me like a list of demos, like 9 demos or something, and I put that on my brand new iPod Classic. By the time the album came out, the iPod Classic no longer existed.
Right, to be fair to Justin, that's all my fault. I think he would have put it out the next day, and he's very much like that. He'll make something and he wants to put it out immediately.
Sure.
Whereas I'm like, I always feel like it has to be right, and I'll take a long time to be convinced to release things.
Is that why you only released 4 songs in the end?
Yeah, in the last 10 years, yeah. we do have another EP ready to go, but I'm
brilliant.
Like,
well, you should have 2 or 3 more EPs ready to go.
Well, yeah, we do, to be honest.
You can't lie to us because we've heard the demos. So.
Yeah. I think he'd like to put everything out like tomorrow if he could. Sure. And it's me who's... I'm the difficult one.
It was one of those things where I'd sat with the demos of Lights on Moscow for so long that when I finally heard Lord Let Me Know... The studio and the bass is just like, you know, basically just turn the bass up to 15. Man, my head was blown off. It was like it's like hearing the Beatles in mono when they released that box set.
That's just like that.
It was exactly the same as that. I always say, do you prefer listening to the Beatles in mono or in stereo?
Stereo.
Really? So the original?
Yeah.
Because I was walking down the street as a kid, I mean, this could be an undiagnosed inner ear problem that I have, but whenever Eleanor Rigby would start, and it would start in both ears, and then it would go to the left ear, I'd always just slightly lose my balance while I was walking home from school.
Right. I always thought that was like one of the cool things about the Beatles.
Oh, really? I just thought it was a nightmare.
Yeah, panning in music is good, Joe.
Nope. One mic, press record, release album.
It always strikes me when you're listening to the Beatles how, and in stereo, how loud some of their extra percussion is. Like, you'll hear like a shaker in one ear just so flipping loud that nowadays you would mix that right down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can hear it. I can't think of the song. Ding, 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 ding. I think it's on Rubber Soul. And once again, in stereo, it makes me fall over. So I feel like you're supporting me getting into accidents.
I think that's your problem.
I need to go to the doctor.
That's an absolutely isolated incident. Now.
With going back to lanterns, so you formed in what? Was it like the late noughties, right?
Yeah, I think 2008 or 9 or... maybe a little bit earlier than that. So it's sort of, it formed out of the end of our last band, Green Space. So it's quite hard to pinpoint when we started. Right. It was like during the death of demise of Green Space. So some of the songs kind of overlapped a little bit.
Oh, okay. So on the first Lanterns record, there's a couple of Green Space classics in there.
No, not exactly, but in the first... when Lantern started, we used to make all of our demos and things available for free on, you know, like Last.fm. Is that even a thing anymore? I don't know.
It was Last a thing FM. For a long
time. I think it still exists, but yeah, we used to do the same thing.
Yeah, we had a fair few Scrabbles in our time.
And MySpace, obviously. Yeah. And we used to make CDs and just flip and like just hand them out at gigs with our gig listings on. And, yeah. So a lot of the kind of the end of Green Space songs were on that.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you were just hand releasing records and releasing them for free on the internet, how did the Bella Union thing come about?
So we started making EPs and just recording them ourselves and releasing them almost like a little DIY label, really. And so we would send them out to places like, you know, like Six Music and various blogs and people that we just thought would be into it. And we kind of started to slowly pick up a little bit of a following that way. And then I think we got on at a couple of festivals like End of the Road in their unsigned tent and things like that.
A couple of small festivals.
Wow. Yeah. So, and also Glastonbury was one, which was an absolute nightmare, but we got on their BBC Introducing Stage.
Wow.
Yeah, if listeners don't know, that's a small festival in the south of England.
Yeah, it's just a yeah, and I think Simon first heard of us around that time, and I think Steve Lamacq played in one of our songs. And was like, I think you'll like this. And then also around that time, Rough Trade was selling our EPs for us. And I think Nigel House, who works at Rough Trade, passed on the EP to Simon as well. So I think other people thought that Simon would be into it and passed on our music to him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then he just got in touch and we've been with them since.
Like I would absolutely say that Lanterns are like a Bella Union band, and I think and I mean that as like a high compliment.
Yeah, it's like a label that I think we liked some of the bands on there. And we always kind of like had certain labels that you have like respect for, and then that was definitely one of them. But we didn't think to approach them. And in our last band, we had approached different labels, and then this time round with Lanterns, we didn't bother because we just wanted to do it because we loved doing it, and we didn't want to like put too much meaning into finding a label to release things. Sure. We just wanted to keep releasing stuff, and that actually, ironically, is what attracted labels to want to work with us.
Right.
It's a nice label. It's a small. There's a lot of artists on there. There's a, you know, it's a huge roster, but it's a small, there's not very many people that work there. There's only, you know, three or four people that you're working with there. And it's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So were they the ones that decided to put your last record forward for the Mercury, or did you kind of go to them and say, oh, we think this would be great? Or how did that work?
We didn't ask to be put forward for it. I think most labels in the UK will put most of their records for like in for the Mercury, because you never know, do you? Like, well, obviously we're a perfect example of you just never know what what will be picked. And like, I think if the music is strong enough and the record has something about it, well, I know myself, because I'm on the judging panel this year.
Yeah.
You listen to everything and, you know, you give everything as much time and attention, whether it be an artist you've never heard of before or a huge, really well-known band who everybody's been banging on about their record for months, you know. So, yeah, Early Union put our record up for it along with other records. And I think we must have known that we would be in there for the running, but you just never think that you... Well, you hope, but you never think that it could happen.
So how many records have you had to listen to in the last however many months since you've...
so many. And it's weird because I had sort of... I don't know if you guys are the same, but I had sort of like not fallen out of love with music, but just stopped listening to much music.
Yeah.
Certainly the last sort of 5 or 6 years I've been... I love making music, but I don't really listen to much music. And I don't know if it's that I don't want it to influence what I'm making, or that I just, I don't know what it is really, but I hadn't listened to much. And so I've listened to so much music the last few months. Like, I'd probably say the last time I listened to this much music, I was about 15 years old. And it's been good, actually. I've kind of fallen back in love again with just listening to music. And like, I'll go for a run every night and put a different album on now, and I didn't used to do that. And yeah, it's been good for me in that way.
What were you doing? Were you just listening to like old comfort songs, or was it all like podcasts and audiobooks for you?
Podcasts, yeah. Yeah. And also just around the house. I hadn't been listening to much music for a long time. But I do a little bit more now.
So how does it work with the Mercury then? So when were you approached to actually be part of the judging panel?
I'm gonna say like May or June.
Right.
May,
okay.
Probably. Yeah, so it's what they do is they have 12 judges, 8 media judges who are like journalists, mm-hmm. or radio producers and what have you. And then they have 4 artist judges. And so this year me and Michael Kawanuka have joined as artist judges.
But how did they just approach you and said, would you like to be a judge?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
So what's the process then? Do you ever talk with Michael about it, or do you just basically, you have to listen to about 500 albums and...
You get a super duper new iPod.
Right.
With all of the albums that have been submitted, which is about, I don't know, like 300 albums or something like that, isn't it? It's like all the albums from in the, yeah, UK and Ireland, because Ireland, Southern Ireland is also included in it.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, and it's just a case of listening to as much as you can. And I think the, yeah, and then you figure out some of your list, and the other judges are figuring out their lists. And then it's a case of getting together over, obviously at the moment it's all been via Zoom, but discussing albums and whittling it down to a long list and then a short list. And we don't decide the winner until the day.
Really? So, that was what I was going to ask. So
we don't discuss it. Once we came up with the short list, we didn't discuss it again. We don't do until the day of the awards. And I have heard before that it's been right down to the last minute, like, as in somebody's gone on stage to read out the winner live on telly and they still haven't decided, and then like somebody's ran on with the decision.
Oh wow.
So I'm quite looking forward to seeing that side of it all.
On the night, you just pick the one album that you choose. Is that the gist?
Yeah, on the night you all decide as a panel, yeah.
So it's a discussion. It's not like you go into a special little booth and tick a box for Mogwai's album.
It's a discussion,
album.
And then I think that you then vote for your one. And I don't know, because I've not been a part of the very final judging, so it would be interesting to be a part of that and see what it's like from that side. And I've heard that it can get quite heated.
Right.
So that should be entertaining as well.
So, how do you feel about awards in general? Because obviously it's basically you've just got a bunch of people in a room and it's a bunch of people's different opinions.
But
also, you know, we're all musicians. We're aware that the Mercury is a massive deal, and it must be such an honor. Well, to be nominated and then to be part of the decision making.
Yeah.
Does that sort of bring it down to earth? Because you're going to be part of the decision for who wins the Mercury. It, like, you know, 10 years ago, that must have been a fever dream.
Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, awards, I'm aware it's music. All art is subjective, isn't it? And I suppose you could say the same thing about taking things like reviews seriously. So it is all subjective, but with something like, and I suppose like the Turner Prize and the Booker Prize, it's similar to the Mercury in that as an artist, it's a big deal to be shortlisted because it's not based on any kind of hype or any backstory or any reviews or anything like that. It's based purely on the record. And I know now from being a judge that when you're on the judging panel, you are objective. And there's records that I wouldn't necessarily say are to my taste, but when I've listened to them objectively and I've found the merit in them, I think there's like some phenomenal work released by other artists, but it's not necessarily something that's, you know, that I would listen to.
Sure.
But I think that's another thing that sets the Mercurys apart. You know, it's not, there's certain awards that are based on the size of label that you're on and the money behind you and the influence there. And only certain genres get a look in because they're the ones being played on, I don't know, Radio One or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what stands the Mercury apart then, is probably why it is a kind of a prestigious and big deal for artists. Having said that, you know, it's like, it's not the be all and end all. Like, there's some incredible records that were released that I thought could have been shortlisted and should have been shortlisted and ultimately didn't get on there. So it's not to say that if you don't get shortlisted, you don't make great music that's worthy of that kind of acclaim.
Do you care to name any of those people, or would that be?
There's a couple of records, like one by Anna B. Savage, which I thought was like probably one of the best records I'd heard from this year. And there was one from an Irish artist called For Those I Love. Not necessarily like my taste with either of those, but I just thought as pieces of work and as records and like what they were doing, they were really special.
Because that's one thing as well with COVID that you haven't managed to benefit from, because obviously the Mercury is seen as such a prestigious thing, both for musicians and for, you know, the general public. And inevitably, if you're nominated for a Mercury, you're going to see a spike in popularity. And that's also something that you haven't managed to yet sort of... Well, I'm sure you benefited from, because more people would have heard your record. But you're really going to see like probably a bunch of new faces when you finally get to go back on tour.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge what difference it's made without... I think had it been a normal year, we would have gone out and played gigs and been able to see... like actually physically in the room how much more attention the band was getting, or how many more people were into the music. But then, yeah, we've got the tour coming up, but then even so, it's, you know, we're just coming out of a pandemic, not everybody's like comfortable going to gigs, so I think still it's going to be hard to tell what kind of impact that's had. It was hard to, I think we did miss out on capitalising on that nomination, but for us, the fact that the album got another lease of life and more people heard it was just so, like, I can't explain how good that was, because I was on a proper downer around that time, like a week or so before we got found out we were on the shortlist, and I was like feeling like, you know, is there much point in making more music? Does anybody really want to hear another Lanterns album? Like, what should I do with my life? I still want to make music, but do other people want to hear what I've got to do? And we'd put that record out after such a long time of being away.
Mm.
And then to not be able to go out and tour, and it felt like the album kind of fizzled out, really. And we'd put a lot of like love and effort and heart and sweat and tears into that. So yeah, I felt on a real downer. And then when it got shortlisted, it was honestly like, I can't explain how happy it made us. Not because, you know, I was feeling like, get us, we've been shortlisted for the Mercury, but it was like, get in, more people are going to hear that album and it's not going to die. And
it
kind of gave us a real morale boost as well as artists, and like feeling excited about working on more music, knowing that that people did want to hear it.
Because it's so difficult when you're away from the public, and it's, you know, with social media and stuff, it's rare that you're going to see all of the messages that say the nice things. Like, it's more that if you're taking up someone's time on Radio One, they'll let you know that they're angry about it.
Yeah, that's the thing with social media. It's people rarely talk about the things they love. They like to talk about what they're not happy with. But we have had nice comments and things on social media.
Mm.
But yeah, it is hard to really truly work out the reaction of your music just from, you know, scrolling through the Twitter feed.
Do you think that with your genre, I would, because I mean, you're not like, I wouldn't describe, I don't know how I'd describe you really. You're not post rock. You're just one of the good indie bands, I guess. Because you know, I've asked Low how they would describe themselves. I asked Mogwai. They all just said we're indie bands. Indie's just the best way to describe it, I think. Because you know, you got nominated on your fourth album. Do you think that this is one of the genres that allows artists to grow more, rather than the real emphasis being on that first album to like really explode? Because I remember our last record, we were described as veterans, which made me feel like old, but also like I'd get respect in like a hard pub. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm a veteran of this genre now. But like, but also because it was said as a good thing, like with post rock, these guys are veterans, so they're trusted. But whereas when we were 21, we weren't trusted as much.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know what it's like to make music from other genres. Mm. I think we're the kind of band that we've always hated when somebody's described us as a particular genre, mm-hmm. and like when people ask me what kind of music we make, I usually just say, "Oh, it's like just an indie band," because it is very hard. And you know, when we've put out records in the past and people have described things as post-rock, then the next thing we do when we get in the rehearsal room is like, right, come on, let's prove we're not post-rock.
We've done exactly the same thing.
And I don't know why it annoys me so much when people try to give things a label that we do, but I think as an artist, you guys are probably the same. You're always trying to prove that you're much more. And I think ultimately we just want to make great records and brilliant songs and grow as musicians. And I don't mean that by we want to get like more proficient and be brilliant musicians. I just mean as a band together, we want to see how far we can go and what we can create. And that's all we think about really. And the fact that we play guitars and we're, you know, an indie band is, probably does help you in that in that sense, in that you can keep growing and pushing, and you know, you're not restricted to just doing things with a laptop or something like that.
Yeah, one of the things I really love about Lanterns is I love your voice, but it's not the, it just really works. It's, you know, we're not listening to Steve Vai and Mariah Carey. It's not like technically perfect, but there's a reason it works. However, you released a live album with an orchestra. Now that does have to be perfect to an extent, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the orchestra have to be perfect.
Yeah.
But we are still free to let go and play as a full, you know, to give it some as a live band. And I think that's what made that show and that recording work, was that juxtaposition between, you know, a live band playing their heart out, and then this orchestra who are reading the sheet music and and adding to that.
Really? So were the orchestra sort of feeding off you guys, or were you playing to like a click track, or?
We didn't play to a click. So we had a couple of sessions where we got in a room with the orchestra, showed them our songs, which was so cringeworthy.
It goes A A D.
Like, I think the first time we got in a room together, and the first thing they did was they went, plays one of your songs, and I had to go on my piano's not on. And I had to just sit playing an A for ages because that was the intro for this song, and I just remember being like, I just want to curl up in a ball and die right now. And then us trying to, because you guys will know yourself, as a band, you end up working out your own kind of musical language that you use with each other and ways of describing the thing that you're trying to do, or the thing that you want somebody else to try and do. And then us trying to communicate with this orchestra, 40-piece orchestra, saying things like, when it does the doof bit, what you want to do, you're like, mega. And then like proper heartbreaky here. And so that was all a bit embarrassing, but it all came together and worked in the end, luckily, because I think we had one run through, which was, might have been the day of the gig. We had one proper live run through with everything. And luckily it all came together.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's an amazing record. One thing that we also have in common with you is that there've been a few personnel changes with the band. And for us, it was a fucking nightmare. How was it for you creating with the personnel changes?
Absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
I would probably say some of the darkest times in my life. I think with the first one was when Adam and Brendan left the band, and it was very, very difficult. Just in the sense of like, how do we play gigs now? We weren't replacing Adam. So I was trying to cover a lot of things there. I'd never played the piano before. Now I write most of my songs on piano. So I was kind of, so in that sense, it kind of helped artistically, but trying to find a new bass player. And then the bass player that came in was a guy called Andy, who was Sarah, who played strings, his boyfriend. Right. So then they both left the band. Like, I think it might have been the week. Well, we were in Berlin at the time when they told us they were going to be leaving.
Wow.
And I think it was like a week before we went to do a tour in America.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and so that record, we did go on tour in America. They didn't leave during the tour, obviously. It was all they wanted to keep going, and but then I think they wanted to go and start a family and things like that. Sure. So they told us about their decision then, and it was just like my whole world fell apart, because so much of my identity and who I was and like what I was working towards was based on the band. And I just felt like I don't know how to pick up the pieces now. And then that record, that campaign kind of stopped halfway through because we couldn't continue touring it. But having said that, those changes meant that we got the lineup we have now, and I've never felt more happy and more comfortable creatively, and just at ease with playing in a band, and we all love what we do. We love making music together, and it just works, like the relationships work so well. So I think all the changes were a good thing. I suppose it's like going through a relationship breakup, isn't it? It's it feels horrendous, and you don't know what you'll do next, but
I think that's the majority. It's the majority of people's default view is like, oh, it's the end of the world. Like, what's going to happen now? The band's over.
So, did you guys find it the same?
Yeah, because it's hard to not have that sense of betrayal. but then after that, it's also just the whole, we're a team.
Yeah, it's that sense of feeling let down, and also this feeling of like, I felt really stupid that I'd thought that we were all on the same page and we're all gunning for the same thing, and
absolutely,
that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, it's a really horrible moment realizing that you weren't all aiming towards the same thing for someone else, that were kind of just passing the time, or it was a hobby, which is even more insulting.
Well, the worst part of it is having to teach the new people the songs again, going over and over and over older songs when you're ready to move on and write new stuff.
When you're ready to write and you're having to teach someone, you know, a song from the mid-noughties.
Yeah, that was a tricky one. But I think when we kind of put the band back together, it was on our third album, Beings, and we were just about to start. So we came back off that American tour with no band, and we were no longer trying to tour that record. It had to just, you know, fizzle out. And then we were like, well, let's just start writing more music. And I think the record and the music on it is quite kind of like dark because of that, and those kind of anxious feelings of like trying to pull everything back together again or wondering what you're doing with your life. But because we'd started working on new stuff, we weren't worried too much about teaching new members the old songs, even though we did. But we could kind of move on to a fresh slate.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry you were going through a shitty time, but it benefited the music.
If you could just go through a few more horrible times, that'd be really great for my playlists. Is there a clear, like, you know, if you're out and about, can you spot a Lanterns fan, or does it or do they all just merge into one big blur for you?
So
they all go to the pub is where they're
yeah
from.
That's what we've learned in the northeast. They go to the pub.
They're the musicians. It's a bit of a mix, really, and I think that's the thing with like streaming and stuff nowadays, is that it's like you say, when I was younger, people their identity was almost caught up in what kind of music they listened to.
Absolutely. Every t-shirt.
But nowadays, I think that people have such an eclectic mix of things that they listen to and spanning decades of music as well, that it doesn't really tend to happen anymore. And I think at our gigs, we do get a real mix of people. You get the people that you can tell listen to Six music.
Yeah.
And you get the people that you can tell will have some sort of like teenagers that come, and I think they've come off the back of we had a song used on a cult video game called Life is Strange, and I think a lot of that crowd, you can tell they've come, well, actually you can tell because they literally wear Life is Strange t-shirts. Oh,
so I'm not even guessing.
And then I tell you what, we do get a lot of dads with daughters. For some reason, men of a certain age with young late teen daughters, it seems to be the thing that they like together. Oh. And it's their little, so I do notice that, unless it's men with very, very, very young girlfriends, which...
was our chat with Hazel. Thanks very much for taking the time. Kieran, at the very start when we were talking about the Beatles, you were incredibly quiet.
I noticed that.
Are you an anti-Beatles man? Are you like one of those post-rock people that's an anti-Beatles person?
I feel like we're trying to out me like we did with Steve earlier.
Hold on, I'm just... Have Beatles ever won a Mercury?
Yeah, you wouldn't have heard of them, mate.
To be honest, they're just they're a band where I appreciate what they have done for music, but I never stick them on. for a Beatles. Laugh. I've never,
I hate you never... and I hate every one of your kind.
And that is, easy.
And that is, oh, and I'm only talking about the Beatles stuff there, just before anyone gets me wrong.
Cancelled after episode 2.
If I get cancelled, that's...
I'm only an acquaintance.
I mean, there's loads. There's,
of Joe.
To be fair, there is loads of other parts of your personality that I don't like, but the Beatles stuff has really got me wound up.
It's in the top 20 parts of his art.
There's plenty of people that like, they're not like their favourite band. Like Joe, would you say they're your favourite band? Or they're in there. They're in the mix for that.
I don't think I have a favourite band. But they're a
favourite band.
Right?
Come on,
they're one of the. I don't have a favourite band, but they're one of the. Few that I can stick on whatever mood I'm in, and it like it's a guaranteed winner.
So they're a comfort band.
Not a comfort, but no, it's something because I thought you know comfort stuff is just it's comforting because there's memories to it. But I'm still hearing, you know, if I go deep into the anthologies, I'm still hearing something I've not heard before and going, do you know what, this is cool.
Yeah, well, for me, they're like a band that I appreciate them on that academic level that Kieran's talking about, but I really. I like them and enjoy them, like all normal people.
I just don't think, you've explored them enough, Kieran. Because it wasn't long ago. It was at the start of the year when because you're a big fan of Nine Inch Nails, and Trent Reznor was nominated for two. Not, I was about to say Mercury's. he's nominated for two Oscars. And I was like, look at this guy. I didn't know he was actually talented. And then you made me a playlist, and that's turned me round. So this is what I'm going to do for you, sir. I'm going to make you a playlist of Beatles songs that I think you'll like. I think I can turn you round.
I guarantee it will not be as good as the Trent Reznor Nine Inch Nails playlist.
I can't believe you've just said the works of Lennon and McCartney don't match up to Trent Reznor.
He's saying that your playlist won't be as good as his playlist. He's turning this into a point scoring event.
No, I can't. I can't. We all know that we can't compete with Joe's tour playlists and Joe's Joe's made a lot of great playlists in the past. It's been very difficult to top. So go on.
That's preaching to the choir.
Then.
This is trying to convert someone.
If you think you can make me a Beatles fan, I'm not saying I'm going to go and see them live.
No, I don't think you are. No, I think, and do you know what I think we've stumbled upon here, guys, is a feature.
Ooh.
And that's what's going to make this an actual show. So
feature
next week,
one.
I'm gonna send you a playlist, and next week we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
It's better than the other feature we had that thus far was bullying Jack.
And I tell you what, talking of my playlists in the tour bus van, one of the early playlists that we used to play a lot included... our guests on next week's show, Low, doing a cover of a Beatles song. And so that is where I'm going to begin this playlist journey. Okay. Do you know what? This is how you make good podcast.
Self-declared good podcasting.
That Beatles chat was illuminating in another way, though. Because I found out we've had so many debates mixing our stuff about panning.
Oh,
and now I know where your deep-seated fear... of panning comes from, and it's the Beatles.
It's my deep-seated inner ear issues that I've clearly got.
This game needs a name.
Yeah, what are we calling it? I tell you what, that's a feature in itself. This game needs a name. So we'll come up with games and then we don't have to play them, just give them a name.
That's
awesome. I'm going to write that down for a separate show that I'm going to do later.
Okay.
Right, so I don't know, what do you want to call it?
Oh, I just had an awful thought, but actually really good name. But
okay, because you have a lot of awful thoughts.
Yeah.
And a lot of awful names.
I thought we could call it conversion therapy, but then I remembered what conversion therapy was.
Wow. That's a great idea.
I'm not opposed to it, right? But we can't include that on the social media or in the description of the episode.
Yeah, Kieran's going through
conversion therapy. It's Joe on Kieran.
Just for listeners, we're not making light of anything here, but just because that is... Let's save it for now. For now, I'm going to call it Kieran's I Love You mixtape.
Well done. Well done, okay. Sir.
Kieran's secret I Love You mixtape that he's going to play on his Walkman on the walk to school. I swear to God, you better listen to every second of
that's
it.
That's what I mean. I know I'm going to be tested on it. I can't even listened to it. I can't go, oh yeah, it was all right.
In fact, I'm going to ask Hazel for her input on this as well.
Oh, fuck.
and you actually respect her, so you might listen to it.
Don't make it too long, though. Because that's the other problem. When it's not post-rock, the songs are so short and it ends up being like 20 songs.
I tell you what, listeners, if there are Beatles fans out there, and statistically there must be, what Beatles songs would you include on a playlist for a moody, flipping, ambient, music, post-rock idiot? And feel free to go deep cut. Feel free to go, you know, anthologies, demos. Feel free to go solo work. Oh, I'm interested. info@codesintheclouds.net.
Solo work counts for the Beatles.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Yellow Submarine, so don't worry about that song.
And one thing I forgot to mention last week, for each episode we're putting together Spotify playlists so that the songs that are discussed or that are relevant to the show will go in a playlist that you can listen to after or before, however you choose, and it'll be in the description.
We've got features, we got playlists. You two did really well on that interview. I thought it was really interesting that especially what she said about the Jimi Hendrix thing. I didn't know about that story.
Oh really? I'd never heard of it either.
Well, I went to Wikipedia just now.
Here's a guy that does some research.
Is true. It's that his primary school teacher saw him going around with a broom pretending it was a guitar.
Wow.
And he like couldn't focus, and it was they tried to get like extra funding to buy him a guitar based on like, this kid will be psychologically damaged unless we can put a real guitar in his hands.
It's oh like, my word!
So
wow,
cool, isn't
amazing.
It? Like, proper, yeah, that is like, really Destiny cool. Stuff.
Well, you just don't hear all the stories of the thousands of other whoppers who walked around with a broom pretending to play guitar, who everyone thought was just weird and stupid and didn't get anywhere.
for me personally, it's great to hear Jack say whoppers in episode 2. I mean, that's a common one for Jack, and it always makes me laugh. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, guys. Do check out the Spotify playlists. Do subscribe. Please tell a friend. Please give us the 5-star reviews, etc., etc. And you can email us on info@codesintheclouds.net.
Say your thing. Say your sign-off.
Oh! What was it?
Take the paper, mate.
I tell you what. Go get your... If you're craning, I'm not complaining. I'll see you next week.